ask Claudia about the original language that these songs are in.
Which is Occitanian. Pages, says the publisher, okay. So you can see it.
Yeah. It's Occitanian, Provençal, which was eradicated after the, slowly, pretty much quickly, 20 years after the Albigensian Crusade when the Pope came. It took him a long time to get, because this is like up in the south of France near Albi, which ends with Carcassonne, that whole region right there. There's a very famous painting of the Cathars being driven out of Carcassonne. Mm-hmm. And so their language died after that. There are some poets who are trying in that part of the world who still know it. But it's essentially not a language that's in currency.
Does it share roots with anything we do know? French or Latin?
Yeah, French. It's old French, and it's also has Spanish influence because it's near the Spanish border, and the Spanish troubadours also wrote in Occitanian at this time, and of course, you know, they weren't. Spain was a country, but France wasn't a country really yet. It was divided. And so after the Albigensian Crusade, the Spanish all of the troubadours fled France and went to Italy or Spain, and they wrote religious poems. And the Spanish troubadours started writing in Catalan and then in Spanish as their, right? But originally they all shared the Occitanian.
And is it rhyme rich?
It's very rhyme, yes. Yeah. It has endings, yeah. You know, yeah.
It's really wonderful to see it on the, to see that
you can
what she's
see
done
it, and, on, you know, it on the pages, yeah. Too.
The introductory essay is remarkable. I mean, I'm so glad that you took the time and energy, and you traveled to France and really soaked up the atmosphere.
Yeah, and it's so hard to feel it now. You know, it was really, I went to go to the Cathar ruins and they were closed. But there was this wonderful painting in the town hall of Albi, where that was such a remarkable painting. You could never see one like in an American town, of these women, like whose, they looked like the French Statue of Liberty, like whose dresses were torn. And they're armed with rocks, and they're throwing them at the Catholic crusaders, and you know they're all dead like in a minute after the painting, but it's just a remarkable period and a remarkable loss for French, and there is a lot of mixed feeling still in France about Occitan, right? It doesn't hold its place, you know. It doesn't get the respect from a lot of the institutions. The biggest center for troubadour poetry is in Lyon, and Lyon is a very different town, and Toulouse.
But it's like a north-south thing too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big north-south thing, and when you read French criticism about French reaction to what a lot of people were trying to say about the importance of the troubadour poetry, they're scathingly, a lot of them, you know, like 19th century, against it. Yes?
How old were you when you wrote your first poem?
How old were you when you wrote your first poem, she asked.
You know, I really don't know, because I never knew I was a poet. But when I decided to go to school and study poetry, my mother said, oh, well, duh, you've always been a poet. Don't you remember that box under your bed with all the poems? And I said, oh, those were poems? And it was just something that I did always, so I never thought of it as, I didn't know it was poetry, really. Even though my mother was an English teacher, she showed me what poetry was, but I didn't identify that until I was about 20 years old, and all of a sudden my brain changed in about 6 months to myself now. I feel like I never learned anything. I only learned how to read and play the piano when I was 5, and I never knew how to do anything else besides that until I was about, and I knew how to write, but I didn't think of it. I thought of reading and writing as, I experienced reading and writing as the same thing. And then 20, suddenly, this door opened, and that's why. I'm hoping it'll happen to my son.
3 weeks later, you were a poet.
Well, it's like two, yeah, then I was in Iowa.
And then you married Donald in 2 weeks.
Long time after that, yeah. Yeah, but no, I just, yeah, I don't know.
So, I was about 8 or 9 when I started to write because I had a crazy childhood that I won't go into, but I was alone a lot. And so having a piece of paper and putting my thoughts out, and I don't think I called it poems, but it was my private conversation with something outside of myself. And that seemed really important to me. And I kept all that material for the longest time. It's gone now, but again, because of family dynamics, but that really solidified in my heart pretty early.
I have two questions. First, just informational question. So when the Crusaders invaded, where were they coming from?
Rome.
They're from Rome.
They took them a really long time to get up there. And they solicited the help of some of the barons who were Catholic. And some of the barons went with them. Raymond de Fort went with them, Montfort went with them, and he essentially led them against his neighbors. Right. And Raymond of Toulouse, whose wife was a known Cathar, was on the other side, and he was conquered, and it took 20 years for the whole thing to actually transpire, but he lost his land and got it back like a dozen times until he was finally really... He died, and then his son took over, and then his son agreed to marry someone from the north of France to bring them into accordance with what the church was doing and what the kings of France were going to do, which was to take all of their land, which is what they wanted to do.
So then my other question is for both of you. So both of you, in a way, are working with, and maybe we're always working with, codes and what codes mean to ourselves and to others, whether they're in the context in your work, in this work, of a culture, of a court, who all understand a similar code.
Right.
But then when you're working privately, and you said just a minute ago when you were telling her about your writing, you said it was my own private way of speaking to myself.
So
we're working privately as poets on our own codes as well, and learning how to tell ourselves things, maybe in poems, that we can't otherwise articulate, that then an audience hears in the way we mean or not. Does that sound like a definition of what we're doing? I think I don't have a question.
I think that's a good definition of what, I think that, you know, to me, it's that interesting interface between subject matter and form that releases knowledge or releases information. That I'm an organic formalist. I've always been so, and I have to find my way into the code that through the form that the language then begins to tell me the information. And how that aligns with culture, I think ultimately keeps revising culture. That's my hope, that we are communally revising that cultural code as we work out our own codes. So,
yeah, when I think through all of my books, I think that I've always been trying to translate social code, the others. The political codes of entitlement and of lack, because I've always felt like what writing was for Ruby is trying to reach the others, to somehow even be able to identify myself as one of them. Mm-hmm. And I knew I felt it deeply, and being raised a Catholic, I was encouraged to feel my connection to everyone, mm-hmm. and that it should be something that I honored and sought and followed. And so I had very little notion of what my interior was, right? And I guess I wrote too to somehow bring that forward into conversation with what I saw going on around me, and a lot of time just like the horror of being a human being and seeing how bad things go a lot of times.
Sounds good. Can you talk a little bit about the form that you used in your walk home? So it was seven syllables, something you made up?
Yes. No, it's the want poem form, for want of a better. And really, for me, some of my books are more formally constrained than others, but always I'm struggling to find a way into the language that allows me to stop living in that surface code, mm-hmm. that constraint of what the first layer of conversation that comes to me often comes to me from that surface narrative. And so somehow to break through that, I need to find a constraint, sometimes more structured than others. And it's for this, why seven syllables? I think because I started to write one morning particularly frustrated. These poems actually started when we were in New York for a trip, actually quite a while ago, and I started these seven-syllable pieces. That's why the subway pieces. And it seemed to me that there was a break after seven syllables. It didn't, and it was amazing to me that I started to even think about syllables. But I was saying to Aaron that he's my guardian godfather about thinking about prosody, and I have never been a syllable counter, but it occurred to me that maybe that would be a constraint. So I think, and I actually had the paper copy of Aaron's new collection of essays that I'd been carrying around. There's a particular essay on the involuntary lyrics, and you talk about the prosody, and I sort of gave me permission to go at it slightly odd. So anyway, I was really glad to see Aaron here in the audience to be able to say that.
I was just thinking in listening to the Trubarit's poems and hearing this kind of new development of a lyric voice, really, that just the whole French literature is in there. It's funny, people discounting it, mm-hmm. because, I mean, and not just poetry, but just the whole obsession of French literature, really, from Madame La Rochefoucauld and Caldero Le Clos and up through Zola and Proust, of course,
Madame Bovary.
The dialogues that these...
And the intense difficulty they have with each other.
Yeah.
Being so close to each other. You know, there's a reason, like, that all of they have exterior walls and, like, courtyards, right? This private... space that they've created, you know, because they don't want to have to be arguing it out forever, but they are.
But it's the whole, it's the business of amour, let's
say.
It's just, that's French literature.
And the banality of it, even, and within Madame Bovary.
Dialogue between the social constraint and the individuals, and the gossip. God knows the gossip. I mean, that's really...
That's so much fun. And you know, I call the gossips in my translation the Twisted Sisters. And I got that idea from some of my colleagues who liked to talk about everybody. And it seemed so twisted to me. And then I saw them in these poems, and I went, oh, you know, it's in us, in this creepy but funny way too.
But I also had to know, I guess now that I know they're face to face, but what the Provençal word for pretty is.
What it is.
What's
the word?
Belle.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's like it's all just, it's all like just older French.
Right.
And the endings are different than they are. You know, they're IS, IRs, it depends.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it though, when you look at the book, you can see the French and Spanish.
Title, but
yeah.
You do the same thing with some lines that you particularly like, that you use them in different poems until you feel like you use them enough?
I'll find a particular trope, subject matter that will recur, but I usually don't return to lines.
Oh.
Which is, you know, it's just interesting how people have different approaches to methodology. But for me, each poem begins begins from what seems like a similar starting point, and then it's important to me to spiral out in a different direction, so that there's a gravitational hold, but that the locus is different. And so, but body, dirt, there are some words that repeat through the sense poems, but not lines.
I have a question, which is, if my students were asked to write an alba, what advice would you give?
Well,
buy the book, says the publisher.
there has to be a sense of danger, right? There has to be a sense of, like you are when you're a teenager, you know, sneaking out the window to meet your boyfriend, like I did in Half Moon Bay on the beach, and that you very well could get caught, and even more so in their period, getting caught wouldn't just be being grounded, it would be possibly very easily they could kill both of them, or they could send the girl back to her parents. Just the same if she didn't have a son, or put her in a monastery, right? So there has to be an intense sense of danger, and there has to be an intense desire and reason for risking all of that.
And stay up all night.
Yeah, and the sun. Yeah. Well, thank you both.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you. Great audience. Thank you, audience. Thank you.
Thank you. That was fun.
It's a lot of fun.